begin shortly.
Recording in progress.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for joining us. You should have received our news release. DHS releases 2025 statewide vaccination rate data, and childhood rates continue to decline. There's also a link to the release in the chat, and it is available on the DHS website. Joining us today to answer your questions is Dr. Stephanie Schauer, the Wisconsin Immunization Program Manager. And before we take your questions, a reminder to stay on mute until you're called on. We'll take two questions to start, and if there's time, we'll come back around for additional questions. And our first question today belongs to Hope Kerwin from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Thank you. I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about why we see some vaccines have higher coverage rates than others when we look at the childhood vaccine data. I'm seeing, shots like Hep B and polio, they're in the 80%, whereas, others are not as high. And so is it when the shot is coming in the series? Is it, the particular disease? Like, do we have an understanding of why some rates are higher than others?
Yeah, so what we are measuring, and this is an annual assessment of vaccines that are received by 24 months of age. And as you noted, each vaccine has a set number of doses that are recommended in a particular cadence, and we measure that. And so some of the vaccines, we're only measuring one dose or within that period, and others, it may be a series. And it certainly takes more time and effort to get a higher number of doses. And so that may be accounting for some of the variance in terms of rates between the different antigens. There certainly may be some other factors that focus in on that, in particular the hepatitis A, given its series and when it's given. If children get off schedule, even just a bit, it is a little difficult to actually get the two doses that are recommended by that 24 month of age. And so that one, why that one in particular is a little bit lower. And we continue to look at that. We do look at, these antigens and vaccines separately as well as part of the series. What we know is when we put all of these series together and we measure them from one year to the next, we have that comparison. And for this year, while nearly 7 out of every 10 children had the recommended vaccines in this series by 24 months of age, we know that 3 out of kids did not. And that's been a decline of almost 2% compared to the previous year.
Another question, Hope?
Yeah, I mean, going off of that, I mean, 2 percentage points seems, seems rather small, right? And so I wonder if you want to kind of put in context why that is alarming.
Yeah, to put it in, you're right. And when we talk about percentages, it's hard to wrap your head around what that actually means. When we look at this particular cohort, so this is just the group of kids that are turning 24 months of age, it means about 1,200 children are receiving these recommended vaccines by this age point compared to last year. That means we've got fewer kids protected. We've got, larger gaps in our community immunity. And so, behind these numbers, we're talking about numbers today, but behind these numbers are really it's children, it's families, it's our community. And this is a good opportunity to really take the temperature and see how are we doing as a state and within smaller communities, how are the protection bearing out and raising alarms or raising concerns when those aren't going in the right direction.
Thank you, Hope. Now to Alex Moe from wispbusiness.com. Alex?
Hi, thanks for taking my question here. So in these latest figures, the rate for the MMR vaccine among these two-year-olds was 79.8%. So the share of these kids getting protected from the measles is now below 80% for the first time in at least a dozen years, based on the DHS webpage. That goes back to 2013, I believe. Can you tell me the last time this rate has been below 80%, you know, looking back further, and if there's any particular significance to dropping below 80% for the first time in years or maybe even decades?
Yeah, and I don't have the exact number sort of further back for that. We certainly can get it for you. But, you know, measles is a very infectious disease and really requires a very high level of immunity in a community such that it won't spread. It's upward of 95%. 80% is a pretty low bar, and it still is not quite where we need to be. And so it is something that we are concerned with as we continue to see that drop. You know, the measles decrease was about a 1.6% decrease compared to the previous year. That's headed in the wrong direction. We need more children protected, not fewer. And as I said, that we really need to be closer, up around 95% of a community protected, so that we don't have an outbreak if measles is introduced into a community.
And another question, Alex?
Yeah, thank you. You know, looking at the overall decline, this is the largest one we've seen in the overall recommended vaccination rate for children and adolescents in about 5 years, it looks like. You know, 2021 to 2024 was holding relatively steady, a very small decrease relative to just the most recent one from the prior year. Can you, you know, talk about any factors that might be driving this larger dip?
Yeah, I mean, I think the changes are due to a number of different factors. You know, it may be accessibility to vaccines. We know that getting kids in to the doctors on time, it can be hard with busy schedules and trying to, you know, rally kids and getting them from school into places or childcare. We understand that there's a lot of misinformation and disinformation out there, that maybe people are questioning vaccines and or they may be delaying or spreading vaccines out. A whole host of reasons why that may contribute to why we are seeing lower rates. So that's really an important point to note. One of the programs that we have, it's the Vaccines for Children program, really helps to try and address some of these concerns. So this is an entitlement program whereby children who are uninsured or underinsured or on Medicaid or Alaska Native or American Indian can access vaccines without charge. They don't need to pay for the cost of the vaccine, and the administration cost can be waived or is zero. And this is a program that's been in existence for 30 plus years and a way to really ensure that no child should go without vaccines due to cost. Insurance all covers vaccines. So this really helps ensure that we've got coverage across all parts of our community. That network can be found on our website. If you go to the website, you can find where there are VFC providers near you. Many of them include local and tribal health departments, as well as private healthcare providers are all part of this network. So that's one thing that we're trying to do to get the information out about this particular program, because we know one of the big concerns these days is cost. And this is a program whereby we can, parents don't have to worry about cost to keep their children protected.
Thank you. Our next questions belong to Eric Gunn from Wisconsin Examiner. Eric?
Thank you very much for conducting this discussion. Over the years, as I've talked to people in public health, I get two basic different groups of people who don't get vaccinated. One is, and you've kind of alluded to both of those, one is active physician, misinformation, disinformation, all the way to maybe hesitancy, kind of all a part of that. The other is access. and awareness. Just even knowing that this is a thing, people who live in impoverished communities, people who may be, you know, working 3 part-time jobs and just beside themselves. So it's really kind of an access issue. Do you have any sense of how much of this gap is because of the access issue and how much of it is because of the hesitancy to hostility issue?
Yeah, you know, I don't have that data certainly for Wisconsin to sort of break it down. And I think you're right. It's sort of both of those pieces. We continue to work on that access piece. We are looking to enroll more pharmacies into the VFC program. We have a few and we're continuing to work because they often can provide perhaps a more accessible way of getting vaccinated. They may have different hours or maybe in, you know, parts of community where we don't have other vaccines for children providers. So we are continuing to work to help increase the access, increase awareness around this particular program. So, you know, talking about it today with you all and hoping that you'll be able to direct people if they have questions about how to access vaccines for their children. We don't want any children to go without vaccines because they weren't aware of this program. Although many providers, as I said, we've got over 720 providers are part of this network. And hopefully the provider that they're already seeing is part of this and they're able to access vaccines. So it's a really good question. We do know that if you sort of look at where is the trust, so going towards that hesitancy piece, that there was a recent study coming out from, I think, the Annenberg School that showed about 86% of individuals had a fair degree of confidence in their primary healthcare providers to provide them information on public health matters, including, and that would include vaccines. And so we continue to, you know, recognize that parents have questions and that's appropriate and okay, but we want to make sure that they're getting those questions answered. And by going to their primary healthcare provider, someone that they trust with their child's health, with these questions so that they can feel reassured that providing vaccines is really the most safe and effective way of preventing some of these really nasty diseases. So working to really ensure that the information that they receive is evidence-based, it's coming from someone they trust, and they're doing their part to make sure that their child and their community is healthy.
Another question, Eric.
Yeah, in addition to bringing more attention to the Vaccine for All, the Vaccine for Children program, the vaccine that you've been talking about, are there other specific plans or initiatives that DHS is either considering or beginning to undertake to try to reverse this trend?
Yeah, you know, we know we can't do it alone. We have what is called the RICE program, or Routine Immunizations Through Community Engagement. And these are small grants that we give out to community-based organizations and local tribal health departments who apply. And these are really geared towards being the trusted messenger and talking about vaccines and vaccine safety and why they are important in their communities. So it's individuals within a community talking to their community. So really supporting that local voice of trusted messengers. So that's one thing. If you look on our website for the RICE providers, you can see that we've got, I think, 25 in this current year. We've been funding community organizations in this way for a couple of years. And really find that they have a good reach and a good way of connecting with people. So that's one way that we do it. As I mentioned, we do work with local and tribal health departments. They are also community partners who are known within their communities. So really making that messaging be more local is such a key part of that. And then I think, you know, just working with other partners in many different spaces and providing routine messaging out to local health and healthcare providers about the latest information, about recommendations, so that they have what they need to really talk with patients and parents about the common questions that they may be getting.
Thank you. Now to Lucas Kim from WKOW-TV in Madison. Lucas?
Hey, just one question for me. You know, you've had a decrease in vaccination rates. Is there any hope in the future that these rates end up going back up?
Yeah, I do. I will say, you know, it wasn't all negative. We did see in adolescents, we saw some increases in meningococcal vaccine coverage, both completion for 17 and 18 year olds and for one dose of meningococcal B also increased. So we are seeing some increases, you know, at least in the adolescent age group, and adults, they remain steady or slightly increased. And so we are seeing some increases in certain areas. I am hopeful that we will continue to see, as many partners are working, that we will see a change. I think, unfortunately, some of the news that we are hearing these days about measles outbreak, it's giving people a better picture of what these diseases actually can do. We've gone for so long without really hearing about measles because it was well controlled. We had high vaccination rates. And it wasn't getting into pockets of community that were so under-vaccinated. But that's changed in the last couple of years. And I think people perhaps will have a new appreciation as we look at the national statistics. I think we're up to 1,200 cases nationally in 2026. And, you know, we're just at the beginning of March. This is starting to have some real impacts on communities as we watch places like South Carolina and see that they're having many exposures and individuals are being hospitalized. I think, unfortunately, it's putting more of a face on how terrible these diseases are and the risks that they bring with, and recognizing that we want to protect our children against these.
Thank you. Now to Maddie Heim from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Maddie?
Hi, thank you. Most of mine have gotten answered, so I just wanted to clarify earlier to Hope's question about what that 2% means. Just clarifying, did you say it's about 1,200 fewer children this year who have received their, or in 2025, who have received their recommended vaccines by 24 months compared to 2024?
Correct. You've got that okay. Right.
Thank you. Thank you. That's it for me.
Thank you, Maddie. Now to Sean Kirkby from Wisconsin Health News. Sean. Once again, Sean Kirkby from Wisconsin Health News. Okay, moving on to Tegan King from the Wisconsin State Journal. Tegan? Again, Tegan King from the Wisconsin State Journal. Okay, well, we have a little bit of time left to go back around for additional questions. We'll begin at the top with Hope Kerwin. Hope, another question.
I am all set. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Alex Moe, WisBusiness.com. Alex?
None more for me either. Thank you.
Eric Gunn, Wisconsin Examiner.
Yes, your mentioning of the improvement in the meningitis vaccine in adolescents, to what extent do you associate that with the fact that the DHS was able to finally bring a rule into being and into action regarding the meningitis vaccine, which I believe was about a little less than 2 years ago now?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, if the last 2 years, we have seen an increase in meningococcal rates rise in that adolescent group, and we do attribute that, at least in large part, to that change in school law. So it had been fairly steady up until then, and then we are seeing you know, increases that typically with vaccination rates, you know, they go up very incrementally. We've seen some a little bit larger jumps and really do attribute that to increased awareness about the meningitis vaccines, and that there's more families, you know, asking about them, more doctors talking with families, and to ensure that kids are protected and getting those. So I think that is indeed shows that school immunization requirements can and do help ensure that, you know, our kids are protected. One thing, Jennifer, I do want to just highlight is that we are coming up to spring break, and just a reminder to families that it's so important to make sure that you're up to date, particularly for MMR. If you are traveling, the majority of measles cases that or outbreaks that are starting are due to individuals who have been traveling where measles is occurring and then bringing them back into the state. And finding that there's, and that's nationwide. And so we're really trying to make sure that as people start preparing to travel, that they take a minute, go to the Wisconsin Immunization Registry or the electronic medical record through their healthcare provider, and check and make sure that everybody is covered with the measles, mumps, rubella. There are some instances where some children less than 1 year of age, if they're traveling internationally to where measles is circulating, that they may receive a dose early on. It's just for like 9 to 12 months of age, I believe. But it is important to connect with your provider and make sure that you are up to date before traveling, because we want everyone to have a good time, but not bring any anything back like measles to Wisconsin.
Thank you for that. And I know Lucas and Maddie said they didn't have additional questions, but I want to give you another chance in case something occurred to you. Lucas?
I'm all set. Thank you.
You're welcome. Maddie?
Yeah, I did have one more come up, actually. And this is a little bit related to what Eric was asking, but I'm curious with those RICE grants over the years that they've been administered. Has DHS seen anything really innovative out of those that, you know, could be a new way to help encourage more folks to get vaccinated, more children?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're all doing such different work, and there is a little description on the website of what they're doing. I think they are being very innovative in where they are going and showing up for their communities, and every community looks different and maybe has events or locations that are particular and helpful. And so they are showing up where people are. I think that's one of the common themes, but those look so different across the state. And we're always impressed at where they end up providing information and having conversations. They are by no means static, and they are moving around and getting into whether it's festivals and fairs. They're meeting people where they're at. So that's one of the commonalities, and there's probably just too many to name, but I would encourage you to look at our website and see those, what all the work that they've been doing. They tend to cover, they may be located in one county, but they may have a footprint that's several counties, you know, around them. And so they're fairly active in doing that. But the key piece is really that one-to-one connection and effort.
Thank you. Last call for Sean Kirkby from Wisconsin Health News. Sean? And finally, Tegan King from the Wisconsin State Journal. Tegan. Hearing none, we will conclude today's media availability. Our thanks to Dr. Schauer and all of you for participating. Additional questions can be sent to DHS Media, and you can find more information as well on our website. Thank you, and have a great afternoon.